Hello everyone, my name is Ki and this is Metamorphoses. Last episode, Apollo fought a snake and was a creep, which caused Daphne to turn into a tree. This episode, someone turns into a cow and it's all Jupiter's fault. Someone turns into a plant and it's all Pan's fault. And someone flies out of the door in search of his father, who might be a god. Hint, it probably is. The kid is flying. This is Book 1, Episode 6. Io's moving through some fields. All the briefers in the area go to Peneus, who had, you remember, just had to turn his daughter Daphne into a tree. There is one river, however, who isn't there. This river is called Inachus. He's hiding in a cave, creating more water for himself, I guess, because he's crying. He is, like Peneus was, mourning for a daughter. Inachus' daughter is called Io. That's spelt with just the two letters, I and O, Io. Inachus cannot find Io. And in a mythological time, where cell phones did not exist, losing your child is immediately cause for worry. Not that losing a child isn't cause for worry in today's world, but you know what I mean. Inachus does not even know if Io is alive or not. He cannot find any trace of her, and he worries something worse might have happened. That she might be nowhere at all. In myths, being dead isn't the same as being nowhere. When you're dead, you go to the underworld and exist there as a spirit of sorts. I would like to add to this that most Greeks and Romans didn't really believe in this mythological sort of afterlife, where Hades or Pluto rules, and there are physical places to go and physical places in the upper world where you can enter the underworld. Adding to that, myths were also mostly stories to the ancient Greeks and Romans. Yes, they believed that Jupiter and Apollo existed, but in the form they'd taken these stories, probably not. Gods were more abstract in the real world, often taking on more specific aspects. A temple to Apollo could be to Apollo Musagetes, to Apollo who leads the muses, so specifically the god of music and poetry. Apollo as god of healing, though he is that as well in the stories, has nothing to do with Apollo Musagetes. But anyway, back to Io. So, what's actually happened to her? Jupiter has happened to her. As you will see, quite often, it's Jupiter's fault. There's a reason the most famous joke among people studying or just enjoying mythology is that Zeus, or Jupiter, can't keep it in his pants. One day, Jupiter sees Io and he's like, damn, she looks good, and then does what normal people do and tries to lure her into a forest. When that, predictably, doesn't work, he announces himself to be Jupiter. Like, that'll work. And then Io runs, as any smart person would. She runs quite far before Jupiter, fucker that he is, makes some mist or something, and that slows her flight, and he catches up to her and rapes her. I do not like Jupiter. I'm not sure if you could tell during last episode, on Apollo and Daphne, but I actually like Apollo as a god. I like him conceptually, and some of the stories in the Metamorphoses with him in it are my favourites. One of these will come pretty soon. In fact, this episode will end with the start of one of my favourite myths. I certainly do not condone Apollo's behaviour in the story with Daphne, but I still like him as a concept. It's a hate-love relationship. I don't like Jupiter at all. I'd be a terrible Roman. Juno, meanwhile, Jupiter's wife, is looking at the Earth from Olympus and sees a strange mist cloud formation where normally there shouldn't be any. Juno isn't stupid and decides to go look for her husband, because at this point, he was already famous for his little adventures. Though Ovid hasn't mentioned any before this. Juno cannot find Jupiter on Olympus, and so she goes down to Earth and tells the mist to go away. Because when you're a goddess, you can do that. Jupiter, who is of course also a god, feels somehow that Juno is coming and decides to do the most logical thing and turns Io into a cow. Yes, a cow. It's mentioned that Io the cow is also beautiful, which, okay, if you're into that. Juno shows up and praises the beautiful cow, because cows are sacred to Juno sometimes. She's like, whose cow is this? Where did she come from? To which Jupiter answers that she was born from the earth. I'd say he's bad at lying had not just last episode many animals also been born out of the earth. So then Juno is like, okay, then I want this cow. And Jupiter can't say that this cow is actually a girl he's just raped, so he's met with a dilemma. He can give the cow to Juno and give away the girl he loves. That's what's in the text, that he loves her. Yeah, right. Or he cannot give the cow. But that could mean that Juno becomes suspicious of him. So Jupiter gives his wife, Io, the cow, because he's a coward. Juno isn't that easily fooled, however, and makes Argus guard Io. Argus is a person, creature, who has 100 eyes all over his head, and his eyes slept 2 at a time, so there was never a moment that he was not watching Io. Io is a cow now, so in the day she can eat some grass in some fields. At night, Argus locks her up. She's chained to something, a cave maybe, and has to eat leaves from a tree, which is somehow worse than the grass she has to eat when it's day. I don't know cow food habits. And she sleeps on the ground. The water she has to drink is filthy. And the worst of all, Io is still human inside her disguise as a cow. She tries to plead with Argus, but can't reach out to him. She can't speak to him. She scares herself with the strange moo sounds coming from her throat. One day, I assume while she's allowed to graze, she comes across the river that is her father, Inachus. There she sees her own reflection and, fuck, she's a cow. She flees from the water too fast for her father to notice that Io was the cow. Io has meanwhile found and recognized her father and sisters. She lets them pet her. She licks Inachus' hands and wishes she could speak to them, that she could ask for help. Eventually, she comes up with an idea. She's still human, and that means she can still write. So Io writes what happened into the ground with her hoof. Her father immediately hugs her intensely, and he gives a very dramatic speech where he laments his daughter, who now has to live as a cow, and he also laments the fact that, because he is a god, he cannot die and has to live with his sadness forever. Argus, who might have been there all along or just now caught up to Io, pulls the father away from his daughter and leads Io back to other fields. Argus then goes to sit on a mountain top so he can look at everything around him. Jupiter, meanwhile, pities the girl and calls his son Mercury to him and orders him to go kill Argus. Mercury is one of Jupiter's sons, who's not Juno's son, as often happens. He's a god of travellers, trade, thieves, and other things that sit on some sort of border between two things. He is, for example, also the one who sometimes takes departed souls to the entrance of the underworld. So Mercury goes to Argus, flying with his shoes that have little wings on them. He takes his staff with him. When he arrives on Earth, he discards his shoes, but keeps his staff so he can pretend to be a herdsman. He starts to play some music on a flute of sorts, and Argus notices the music. He asks Mercury in disguise to join him on the mountaintop, and Mercury, who's probably like, fuck yeah, this is easier than I thought, comes and sits with Argus. He talks and plays his music to try to make Argus, and all of his eyes, go to sleep. Argus doesn't fall asleep easily. Part of him is still always awake. He's even awake enough to ask Mercury where his flute comes from, because it seems that it is a new invention. Mercury tells him the story, so this becomes a story within the story. This will happen more often. The story takes place in Arcadia, sort of in the center of the Peloponnese in Greece. A nymph lived there, called Syrinx. She had had a hard life until now, because satyrs and gods were creepy, and she had had to avoid a lot of them. She had, like Daphne last episode, dedicated herself to the goddess Diana, goddess of the hunt and virginity. One day, Syrinx is hunting and Pan notices her. Pan is often a son of Mercury and god of nature, but that's not mentioned here. Sometimes he's also depicted with goat's legs, like a satyr. Pan calls Syrinx, and she, of course, ignores him like a smart woman, and flees. She comes to a stream called Ladon, and asks the water nymphs, her sisters in a sense, to make her unfindable. Pan catches up to her and grabs her, but instead of finding a nymph, he touches reed. He sighs, and the sound travels through the reed pipes and makes a new sound. Pan takes some reeds and glues them together, from long to short, with beeswax, and so reed pipes are born. That's the flute thing Mercury was playing on earlier. Anyway, apparently Mercury is a boring storyteller, because halfway through this story Argus had fallen totally asleep. All his 100 eyes were shut. Mercury does some shit with his stuff that makes him even more asleep somehow, and then he fucking kills him. Just straight up sticks his sword into Argus's neck. Juno, understandably mad, decides to use Argus's many eyes for another of her sacred animals, the peacock. And that's why there are eyes on the tail of a peacock. Juno then takes her anger out on Io, instead of on Jupiter, who cheated on her, or on Mercury, who killed Argus. Typical. Juno sends a demon of sorts to scare Io. It kind of sounds like this demon is not a physical being, but a demon in Io's mind. She goes a little crazy and flees. Eventually, after probably a while, she comes across the Nile. Yes, the Nile in Egypt. Io started her story in Argolis. That's a part of the Peloponnese. There's quite a bit between Argolis and Egypt, including a sea, that or she went around all the way to the north of Greece, and then back down through modern Turkey, eventually coming to the Nile. She collapsed from exhaustion at the shore of the river, and turns her head to the sky, starts weeping and mooing, trying to ask Jupiter to end her curse. Jupiter hears her, and goes to his wife Juno, and asks her to end Io's suffering, promising that he will never be unfaithful again. Yeah, that'll last long. Juno agrees to this, and Io becomes human again. All her limbs become those of humans again, and her face is also human again. In fact, she is entirely human. No catch. She's still scared to use her voice, though, because she thinks it might still sound like a cow's. Slowly, and carefully, she talks again. And it's a human voice. The next sentence says that she is now a goddess, whose priests wear linen. The priests who wear linen were apparently priests for the cult of Isis, an Egyptian goddess. That means that Isis is another name for Io. Io has also given birth to a son, whose father is Jupiter. I wonder if his embryo or fetus was also transformed into that of a cow. The son is called Epaphus. Somewhere in the neighbourhood where Epaphus lived, there was another boy, Phaeton, also the son of a god. His father is the sun. Sometimes, though not always, this sun is Apollo, because he is also sometimes god of the sun. Sometimes the sun is a different deity. This is one of my favourite stories, like I mentioned earlier, and though the sun isn't literally mentioned as being Apollo, I like to think it is, because as I said, he's one of my favourite gods. I will call this character the sun during the story, but know that in my heart I'm actually saying Apollo. You can disagree. So, Epaphus and Phaeton are talking, and Phaeton starts to boast about his father being the sun. Epaphus becomes angry and asks Phaeton if he believes everything his mother tells him, because there's no way his father is actually the sun. Phaeton goes to his mum, Clymene, and tells her about this. He asks her to give him some signs of his godly father, something with which he can prove that the sun is his father. Clymene raises her hands to the sky and the sun and swears that the sun is Phaeton's father. This seems very dramatic and serious, so it's probably true. I mean, swearing something while looking upon the sky and sun, you'd probably get shot down by lightning or something if it's not true. More than that, Clymene tells Phaeton that his father's house is not that far off. You just have to go east, to where the sun comes up every morning. And in the spirit of every parent ever, Clymene tells Phaeton to go ask his father. Quickly, before the end of this episode's story, I would like to make clear that this story does say that there is a point that is the most east where the house of the sun is. In many mythological stories, the world is flat and you can go to the edge of it. This does not represent the thoughts and ideas of the Greeks and Romans in the times these stories were written down. It's a popular myth that everyone thought the earth was flat before Galileo discovered that it is roundish, but that isn't true. People in the ancient world knew well enough that the earth was round. It's just that stories don't change that much. I mean, a lot of modern stories have magic in them, and the authors don't believe magic actually exists in the real world. Anyway, back on track. Phaeton follows his mother's advice, and apparently flies to the east, which should already be an indication that his father's a god of sorts, I'd say, if your son flies out of the house. He flies all the way from Ethiopia in Africa, where he lived, to India, which is reasonably east, and enters his father's house. And that was that. Next episode, we continue Phaeton's story, and he gets to meet the sun. I hope everyone enjoyed this episode. If you would like to talk to me, you can do that on Twitter, that's at MetamorphosesK. And I made a Tumblr, Gee-Metamorphoses. I hope to see some of you there. Until next time, bye.